Dirt and Sprague.
Swung on, hit deep, right field on its way. That ball is gone. A mammoth three-run home run for Kyle Schwarber, number 40 on the season. He leads the major leagues, and he has put the Phillies up 6-0 here in the second inning.
Andy Dirt Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
There it goes, line drive, base hit in the left. Here comes Thomas. He comes to the plate. The Braves win. Ha-Sung Kim mobbed out there on the bags. The man without a base hit since June steps into the batter's box as himself, steps out as Superman, and it's a 6-5 winner for the Braves.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Hello, good morning. How we doing?
What is happening?
I thought I saw this fire smoke, and now it's crazy to turn the news and see, like, actually live from it.
The KGW's there. They're on the scene. They got boots on the ground.
I don't know what is on fire, but when I drove in, I was like, dude, that looks like smoke in that darkness.
Something going on over there, man. I don't think that's early clouds rolling in. When I was driving in, I saw a guy. There was an intersection blocked off with three cops about three blocks over here. Well, there was a guy on his knees with his hands behind his head, and cops had guns pointed at him.
Those are cop cars.
I'm going to go ahead and keep on driving. I'm going to keep on going that way. I'm going to kind of blow through this stop sign. Can't go left there.
It's so odd sometimes to be driving or be walking around an area, and you see, like, sirens and lights, and you're just like, well, okay.
I wonder what's happening. Let's just keep going about it.
No big deal.
Somebody's building's burning down. I got a guy getting arrested over here with guns pointed at him. I'm just going to go host my radio show. Let's talk about the Hood to Coast. Are you ready to go?
I don't know. Damn. You know, I say it every year. Some years I feel much better than others. This is a weird year in the sense of, like, the conditioning is ready.
Yes, you feel like you're in shape to do it.
I've exercised pretty routinely for the last, you know, X amount of months, been on a good roll.
Yeah.
Eating well.
Geared up, ready to go.
And I would say about a month ago, the side of my foot, the outside of my foot, started feeling how it felt a few years back, and that is sometimes you run and it feels broken, but that's just because of how bruised it is.
Sure, just banged up.
I don't really know what causes that. This is the second time it's happened to me.
Are we talking like every time it hits the ground, you feel like a little bit of pain?
Yeah, like, sometimes I walk during commercial breaks to go to the bathroom, and it takes me a few steps for my foot to not hurt.
You got to kind of shake it out a little bit.
It feels like legitimately like there's something on the outside of my foot kind of broken.
Something has happened there, and you just have never dealt with it.
Well, I had a doctor look at it because it happened to me one time, and they were like, it's not broken. What happened is it's just inflamed, and I overcompensate sometimes on one leg because my other leg has bad knee.
Yeah, so it leads to the foot injuries.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of that. Okay. So I haven't I ran 1 mile in San Diego. Right on the beach.
While you're on vacation, you got to go for a run on the beach while you're down
there. Because where we were, it was too pretty.
You feel like Rocky down there running on the beach.
That's the only run I've had in like 3 weeks.
That's the only one,
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of the way to do it, though, is it not? Like, you don't want to put your body through too much the month before the Hood to Coast, because we got a coworker, our guy Dave, who's loves this event every year. He's banged up. He can't do it.
He popped his calf. He got a calf strain.
Dave, what are we doing? A week before the race, you're going out running 6 miles? Calm down, man.
Dave is more into running than I am in the sense of, like, he really studies it. He does it. He goes like 50Ks. He told me he was running 6 miles, and I'm like, the week of? Why? Just rest, stretch, hydrate, you know?
What's that last 6 miles going to do for you?
Oh, it does nothing.
In fact, it does nothing.
They've done enough studies to conclude whatever you are 2 to 3 weeks out from the event
is where you are. There's nothing you can do in 2 weeks that's going to make it easier or harder.
You can run hills every day for 2 weeks leading into the event. It won't help.
It just is what it is. That's the body that you got, and you got to go find a way through that race. I was bummed for him because he starts talking about the Hood to Coast with you.
And then it gets me going.
And then it gets you going. And I want to say those conversations start sometime around April, maybe even earlier than that. And I remember every time he brings it up, I look at the calendar. counter. I'm like, dude, isn't that at the end of August? We got a ways to go here, man. Like, it's March Madness right now, and you guys are. I'm thinking football season when I think of Hood to Coast. You got a ways to go.
Me too.
So
week zero.
He looks forward to it every year, and so the fact that he can't do it is a big bummer. Do we know what legs we're running? What legs do we got?
I'm starting the event this year for the first time.
First time you've ever done this.
I've ran every leg in Van 1 except the first.
Okay, so you're popping your open
downhill
cherry?
For 5 miles.
Yeah, it's about a 6 in change, and I would say about 4.7 of it is down the mountain.
How do we feel like the foot's ready to handle the down the mountain? That's got to be harder on the foot, I'd imagine.
It's harder on the knees. Downhill kills the knees.
It's the quads and the knees because you're constantly you don't want to fall out of control.
No, you don't want to get going.
So
too
you're
fast.
In a way when you're stepping, you're kind of like stopping.
Yeah, to control yourself a little
so
bit.
So your quads and your knees, it takes a pounding on it. How are we feeling about it? I mean, Andy, come on.
Is that a big honor to be the first leg, or is it bigger deal to be the last leg?
It just depends on your perspective. Like, do you take a lot of pride in being in good shape?
No.
I can't remember the last time I was in good shape.
That's not really... If I was in good shape, yes.
Hypothetically.
If I was in good shape, yeah, I would take a pride in it.
If you take pride in being in good shape or being a really big key contributing member to your team.
You're the MVP.
You're not running one.
Mm. Oh. How come?
One's the easiest
leg. Because it's downhill.
I think one is the easiest leg literally of all 12
legs. Well, you're ready to go. It's the start. You're all fired up.
It's cool in the sense of like you're at the starting line.
On your marks. Get set.
You know, they say your team name and then they, all right, go. And everybody rings their cowbells. But then it's all downhill. And then after that, there's no fanfare.
Yeah. Like I know that it would kill my knees and quads. I feel like if I ran the Hood to Coast, that's the one that I would want to do.
Number one.
Just to have downhill momentum.
If you ever did the event with me, like you were ever like, dude, I actually think I'm going to do it.
Let's do it. This is the year.
We do a whole
crisis
show thing.
running thing.
Yeah.
I would give you one.
Like, right? Because you're
be
going
your first
downhill.
Year doing it. That sucks. And I'm not looking forward to the all downhill, but.
Banging up your knees.
The second run is probably the run I look forward to the most. It's 5 miles and it's right here. It runs right past
through
our
the
building.
Area.
It's completely flat and
the
downtown.
The brutal one, I got to imagine, is going uphill through the Coast Range. Does that kill people?
So I've done the hardest legs, and I would tell you the hardest leg is leg 5. You're the 5th runner. So the first leg of leg 5.
How many are on a team? I mean, how many guys?
6 in a van.
Okay, 6 in a van.
So you all run your leg, and then you hand off. You get about a 5-hour break, and then they hand, it's just constantly.
Is there an actual baton or something that
it's
you hand
bracelet.
Off? It's
a
bracelet. Oh, okay.
It's like one of those, snap bracelets.
Yeah, okay.
And it's so cool when you can, smoothly slap it on the next
so
runner.
Somebody sticks their wrist behind.
Somebody does that, but it's also, it sucks when you go to slap it on the wrist and it bounces off and now it's on the ground.
You're tired.
Go get it.
It's the middle of the night. It's 2:00 in the morning somewhere. You can't see what you're doing.
Yeah, so I would say running into the Coastal Range can get difficult for a few legs, but if you're the 5th runner of Van 1, traditionally, that's been the hardest. They've re-ranked them, but I don't agree with the ranking personally. The first leg is almost all up, and it's just terrible. And the last leg is a slow build to a huge up.
Ooh.
And then it's 2 down.
Ooh.
And it's such a bad up on that last leg for leg 5 that everybody stops at the top of that hill. And does
the Rocky pose,
a tunnel, a human tunnel, and then a toilet paper line because you see it and you go, good God.
I don't want to do this. That looks way too up.
And I did that one 2 years ago for the second time.
You're like, no, I'm not doing that one again.
So I'm not,
I'm not on that one.
Never say never,
sure.
But yeah.
I've done my duty on our team. I've done the uphill climb.
I've carried enough years to say, I'm going to take the easiest leg this year. And it just lined up perfectly because I got this little injury.
Yeah, I do imagine, though, to Swag's point, I feel like the coolest one to do would be the final stretch, would it not? Running onto the beach and into the finish line? Or does the whole team kind of join in for the last bit?
So the last runner, some people think it is. And my cousin is on the team in Van 2. And she, I think this is her 3rd year doing the event. And she literally won't try another leg.
That's the only one. She just wants to do what she does.
I have an opinion on this.
Okay.
And some Hood to Coasters out there may disagree. If you're going to do the event one time, sure, try to negotiate the leg that you think is the most exciting.
Yeah.
If you're going to regularly do the event, you should be mixing it up.
Yeah, to change up what you're doing every year.
Just to get the, I've done Van 2 one year, and that was cool because it was very unique, and I didn't know where I was running, and it was, I like seeing new stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want to, because if I run the same leg, I'll go, God, I know exactly where I'm at and how much more I have to go.
Right. Yeah.
Right? I want a new experience.
That makes sense. A little mystery on it. Exactly. Of like, hey, how far in am I? This is kind of fun.
I'd say 99% of your final leg as the final runner is not beach. But they call you out when you're close, and then, yeah, your team is just...
kind of hanging out there.
Yeah, probably 150 feet from the finish line, waiting for you in the sand. Everybody's sore, and when you get into the sand to go finish, we all kind of, like, run together through the...
jog the final, yeah. However many steps.
Yeah, we'll okay. Celebrate.
So then it's a little bit of an overrated final leg then. Because you would, I yeah. just, I didn't know how much of it was on the actual beach and you're like flocked by
barely
thousands of people.
Of it. Yeah. Like, it's a cool like setup. You can yeah. hear it. It's a party.
Here they come.
Yeah. And the okay. announcer yeah. way, way away. Like, you can't even see them when they announce. You're like, oh, she's coming. And you keep looking. Like, I don't see her.
Where is she?
And it takes a while. But eventually, yeah, they show up and then run 100 and 200 feet onto the beach.
What's the team name this year?
Legendarily mediocre. Mediocre.
Legendarily mediocre.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, our start time is getting changed, so I don't think our team's getting announced.
Oh, okay. What time's the start time tomorrow?
It was originally 8:30.
You guys were early, right? Yeah, early in the morning.
Now we you want 5.
5 a.m. You want 5 a.m.?
It sucks to wake up, but you, for a team that's slow, hand up.
the earlier the better.
Well, if you start too late, you get to the beach too late.
What, they like wrap everything up?
Oh, there's a certain time that, yeah, they start... breaking everything down.
Tents are getting packed up. The
There's
beer's
been
all
years
gone.
Where people get to the beach at 9:30 p.m.
Holy hell.
And the music ain't going.
No.
And
there's
not
party.
Like, hey, coming in now, team kick ass.
It's just your four teammates in one van. Yeah. Mercifully coming to an end.
Well, I had the one
That's
year where.
That's depressing as hell, man. They should be mandated to stay the entire time.
There's
Come
only
on.
So long. And that's the difficult thing with late starts is if your team is slow and you get a late start, oh, buddy, you better pick it up because you'll be lucky to finish.
Right. How many walkers do we have in the two vans? It's okay. You don't have to call out names. It's all right. I'm just curious. Because if I did it, I know that there would be periods that I would end up walking.
It's one thing to take a momentary pause to walk.
Yeah, like I'm 3 miles into my 6 mile leg. Let me take a little break here.
I don't know. I really don't know because I don't see van two.
Okay.
I only see.
Right, because you guys finish your van leg and then you go drive ahead, right?
Yeah,
to
once
whenever
we hand
the next
off,
one is.
They take off and then it's on to us. Like once we take off tomorrow and we're done, we'll leave Sandy High School. We'll go to this food cart pod. We'll all grab whatever we want to eat. We'll go back to my house. We'll all shower and we'll largely rest until we need to meet up.
And then, jump back in the van and
That's
keep
usually
going.
How it goes. And you meet up again. They dip, you run. You hand off, we'll go,
okay.
Rest again.
So that's a respectful captain right there, not calling out the weak links on your team. I like that.
There are no weak links, Andrew.
Everybody's
it takes
a strength.
A team to get to the coast, man.
Everybody has a strong chain link.
Do you think you'd ever do it?
I mean,
do you ever think you have one
I'll never
year
say never.
Where you're like 39, you're 40,
yeah.
You're like getting healthy, your kids are wearing you out, you're like, I got to change something here.
This is a midlife crisis, I'm not bald. I need to go do some running, man.
Bald is beautiful, brother.
Bald is beautiful. I got a cute bald on top of my head.
I might be shaving my head all the way down for this event.
Fully bald?
I don't know if I'm going to
go like
fully
a one.
Bald. But I might go zero.
Zero. Ooh.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Looking
like a chia pet.
I might look like a chia pet, yeah. I'm still debating if I want to do it. I have to do it today if I do it.
I've decided at some point I am going to shave all my hair off, but I'm not going to tell anybody when I do it. I'm just going to pop out. You're not going to expect it.
Are you going to wear a hat?
Yeah, are we going to know?
I think you'll know. Yeah. Even if I wore a hat, if I had no hair, like if I was bald,
are you
would
talking
know.
About skin bald?
Skin bald. Skin bald.
You're just going to
do it down to the bone.
You going to go razor blade?
At some point, yeah. I mean, I might go like clippers first and then razor blade afterwards.
Well, yeah.
I think you should shave to a zero and just see.
See what it looks like.
And then like, if your head gets tan enough and you grow out your beard a little bit, I think you're going to look great.
It's the hard part. You got to really worry about the hat tan when you're fully bald.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you
got to
be out there exposed a little bit. Get a little burn on that head.
You got a little burn. A little burn on
nice,
that tip.
Dude, because bald guys that have good tanned heads.
You got to burn your tip, yeah.
It looks good.
It does. It doesn't look
it's
bad.
Good look.
You can have facial hair mixed in there. Like, I can pull that look off. I'm going to grow out my hair one more time. This is like a last dance for me. We'll see how long I let it last.
Are you trying to do the whole season?
I don't know if I'm going to make it the whole year. We'll see. Until it gets to an annoying part or they lose, they start like 0-3 and then I do the same depressed hair shaving, I'm going to grow it out. And then at that point, whenever I decide to cut it, I'm going to cut it all the way down.
Mm.
And we're just going to test it out. We're going to see what feels good, what fits me.
So, Swag, what would be a tell for you if he's not going to tell us, he's going to show up with it. What would be a tell for you that you think... This could be the week. Because for me, I think it's going to be facial hair. If that, because I've seen his beard, he always has like a shadow at a minimum.
Yeah, if it gets thick.
If it gets like thick, and I'm like, he hasn't shaved that in a while.
Start growing it out a little bit.
I'm going to start thinking, balancing it out. He's coming in here, and it's going to be gone one day. That's going to be my tell.
To answer your question, though, I mean, I could see myself doing it at some point. It's not something I'm actively thinking about, nor do I actively want to do, but I would never say never. Some people get into running later in life. Our guy Dave, he didn't start running until he was later in life.
Dave now used to be a really fat guy who didn't do anything.
Now he's addicted to it. He can't stop running. He wants 50 Ks, 80 Ks, 90 Ks. How many Ks you got?
That's insane.
I think my biggest problem is, like, I love... It's an honor to run the event because of how badass the whole thing is. Our guy Dan over there at Hood to Coast, they do such an exceptional job. My problem is I love everything about the event. I just worry if my body holds up.
Sure.
And if I ever lose it, I don't know how I'm going to replace it. And that's kind of an underrated big deal for me.
If you lose the Hood to Coast, like if you physically can't
like
do it because of a foot injury
like
or whatever.
My knee is awful. Yeah. It probably has to be cleared out.
At some point, yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's arthritic. It's that bad. My foot has these, now it's the second time I felt like my foot's broken. I don't know what to do. Maybe I'm training wrong or whatever. If I lost it, I'd be devastated.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd do because even though it's a 1.5 day event,
it scratches that competitive itch for you and the teamwork and the bonding and the things that go into it.
Yeah, and yeah. Running is not for every. I don't even really like running. In fact, my hottest take is that people don't like running. They like what the running gives them.
Yes, you like the high at the end of it, the feeling that you get when you're done.
Exactly. Yeah. Running sucks.
Yes.
It's just not good for you.
No.
But losing that event would be devastating for me. I'm too old to get in direct league stuff. And I know other people our age are doing it, but
we need to pick up our slow pitch softball team again. Fill your hole.
That actually was great for me.
It was a lot of fun.
We had a great time, man.
Yeah, Cooley, where you at on that one? He's back. We got our captain back. Tubbs is here. Why don't we have a slow pitch softball team anymore?
Like you, we golf, right? We all three golf. Yep. I don't know about swag. I don't even know about you. Like, don't you guys? This is the only reason I do the event. It's not like. I'm not just some psycho who wants to run at a 7-minute pace. I legitimately love being in the van. I love rooting people on. I love the spectacle of a team finishing at the finish line together.
The camaraderie that comes with
it. The accomplishment when you finish.
Yeah.
Like, do you guys don't have that itch?
I have the competitive itch. That I understand. And that for me is always and will always be golf. Whether you're competing against people you're playing with or just competing against yourself and trying to do something.
Right.
That scratches my itch. I also have not had the taste of a team itch in quite some time. If that makes any sense. So maybe if I got a taste of it.
Did our softball team not do? I mean, we weren't really competitive.
No, I have goofy. A really hard time getting competitive with that.
That's beer league, too.
Unless there will be moments where other teams would talk ass or do, like, you know, a girl's playing second base and you're running third to home when she has the ball. Like, dude, come on, man. Like, we're really going to be that kind of. Like,
or then, you bring a drummer to a game.
Yes, then my fire would get going of like, dude, all right, now let's bury
you
these guys
in
the dirt.
You need a challenge, don't you?
There needs to be some sort of, if there's not a challenge
something
coming my way.
Personal at you.
There's not like, dude, I'm drinking a beer over here. I'm jogging to first base when I hit a ball in the gap.
Like, Kurt Ludwig has a Coors Light next to him as he's throwing.
I got a beer out there at shortstop. Like, I don't quite have that unless you give me a reason to have it. But I do understand the point. Like, if you gave me something that was teamwork related and I got that high again, that I could see why you would want to keep chasing after it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the Hood to Coast would do it for me or not, but I imagine that it would.
Well, I've invited people in years past. Like, my little brother did it a couple years ago, and he never really played team sports like I did. He had a couple years of T-ball baseball, and then he did wrestling 1 year, and I made fun of him so hard that he quit, even though he went to, like, state. It was kind of crazy.
He was a good wrestler. You bullied him into quitting wrestling?
He could be on
the WWE right now. Yeah.
My only time crying in therapy was talking about him,
yeah.
And part of why I cried is I felt awful that I ridiculed him so hard.
What was it over? The singlet?
Cauliflower
ear? What'd you throw at him?
It's more like big brother, little brother banter, right?
Sure.
But it was just like incessant.
Never stop.
And he just quit. Yeah. He did 1 year and he was really good. But
I'm not doing that anymore.
I had him do Hood to Coast with me 1 year. I'm like, he's going to love this.
Yeah, he's going to get into it.
He couldn't have cared less.
Really?
Yeah. It was kind of a bummer reaction, to be honest with
you. Yeah, that's a bit disappointing. Everybody's going to be a little bit different. And that's why I say, like, if I did it, I don't know if it would fill my team whole or not. You could make the argument it could. Depends on how you get along with the people in your van and the camaraderie that you build up. Like, that's a tough part, I would imagine, for some, if you kind of parachute in, like, you don't know the people. If you've done it every year, and you seem to have the majority of the same team every year, so you kind of have that shared experience where a lot of same faces come back.
Yep.
So if you just pop in for 1 year, you kind of feel like the new guy or the outsider, maybe doesn't quite feel the same or hit the same, and you're like, nah, I'm out. I did it once, now I'm done.
You know one team that Swag could join, because he always finds a reason to not do a DeCoast. Usually it's my birthday.
It is his birthday.
It's actually Dolly Parton's death day, sir.
Working 9 to 5.
There is a PDX DeCoast speed walking event our listener just pointed out, and you know,
let's go.
Nobody else in the fan studios has walked an 11 minute mile.
Yes, we need that. I'll do that one with you, Swag. I'll speed walk with you.
Which, by the way, and I'm not trying to take shots, I'm just trying to give you a compliment here. That pace is faster than a few people on my team's mile pace when they run.
You just acknowledged you got some walkers.
No, I did not.
You just acknowledged it.
I acknowledged how fast he walked.
There's some walkers here.
Dude, he was huffing and puffing on that walk. So I'm looking forward to the event. I am bummed I'm out. It's kind of like a vacation back. Oh, I'm out again.
It's a football Friday. We'll be all right.
I think you'll be all right.
We'll be okay. We got enough to get to tomorrow.
It's a football Friday, and today is a football Thursday.
Yes, it is.
God, today we have quite the slate, even though the games will probably largely suck. I do have a question in regards to preseason football on Thursday, but coming up next, we're going to do an early dirty poll check. Who is the number 7 team in all of the land, according to one, Andy Dirt Johnson? Find out next on 105.1 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. It is 6:28. You know, usually we roll into other things in sports. And for the most part, we've been doing these dirty poll reveals one by one at around 7:30.
Yes, had to move yesterday's to 9. Now exactly. Now we're bouncing around, man. Whenever they can go, we go.
We Omaha in all circumstance, and we're going to bring on Matt Schodel of Kane Sport, which is an On3 production covering the Miami Hurricanes, who come in at number 7, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson, the runner-up of the national championship game.
Yes, they were close to winning a title last year.
Still loaded with talent. They brought in what you say is a better quarterback, and you have them all the way down at number 7?
It's more so a sign of the depth at the top of college football than it is necessarily a feeling about Miami, if that makes any sense. Like, I think Texas yesterday and Miami today showcase how thick it is at the top and how any of these teams have a legitimate shot at winning a national title.
Well, let's bring on Matt Schodel right now. Kane Sport On3 production. A lot to get to with Miami at number 7. Matt, good morning. Thanks for hopping on with us. We appreciate the time. I want to start with one thing I have noticed. I'm not a big Mario guy, largely because he was one of the worst people I've ever had to interview in my life. But what you can't say about Mario is, even if he does, you know, from time to time, screw things up in game, we've seen that in Miami, we saw it in Oregon, it feels like somebody that is always willing to evolve, change, morph, do what it takes to get to the next level. And last year they took a step and got to that national championship. I want to ask, what stood out that was different about Mario Cristobal last year from previous years at Miami?
That's a great question. Well, it's interesting. I don't think that Mario's changed at all, honestly. He's always been a great recruiter. He's always had the reputation of not being a great game day coach, as you mentioned, right? He's always implemented having great trenches, which is really how he built the program at Miami from the inside out. What changed wasn't Mario. What changed is that his recruiting has always been great, but those guys, it takes, as we know, 3 to 4 years, right, for them to develop and be ready. And then he really refined his free agency is what I call it, but his portal. The guys he got out of the portal were no longer just average or depth guys. You saw 11 starters last year out of the portal that were starters and massive contributors. And this year, a little bit less so, but again, they're the free agents, right? The Darian Mensahs, the Cooper Barkates, the Damon Wilsons, the Omar Thorntons of the world, right? So really, to me, and I say this a lot down here, but I feel it's true around the country, you can be a great coach, but if you don't have great players, your team's not going to be great. And you can be an average coach, and if you have great players, your team's going to be great. That's my opinion. I think Mario's a great coach, maybe not a great game day coach, but in college football, if you have the recruiting in place, the assistant coaches to get the development in place, and you can use NIL money to get top players around the country to fill any holes you have, you're going to be a great program. And that's why I think Miami's on the right track, not just for this year, but really for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. The Jimmys and Joes will always matter, and he's great at getting them. It's funny when you look at Miami, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but as I go through the roster, and you mentioned some of the big portal guys that they brought in, I do think they've upgraded at quarterback. I think Darian Mensah is an absolute stud. Not that Carson Beck wasn't good, just a different player, and in my opinion, a higher level player in college. Is the offensive line the only concern, which I would imagine is a good thing for Miami because that's always been his biggest strength. And if he's going to figure something out, it would be the O-line. But is that kind of the way Miami fan feels about this team that, hey, we got a bunch of new starters up front. If they gel, it feels like everything else is in place to go on a run again?
Yeah, to put it simply, yes. The issue that fans and reporters have right now is that the quarterback, I agree, Darian Mensah is an upgrade on what we saw last year from the quarterback. The running backs are all back. The receiving core is probably as good as we've seen here since 2001 when Andre Johnson was running around the field. I mean, out of this world good, right? First time in Miami's history they've had two high-level 1,000-yard receivers returning. Tight end Elijah Lofton's healthy, and yeah, the room's not deep, but he looks really good, right? Which leaves the offensive line. And the weird thing to me about the offensive line and why it's sort of it can go either way is – they didn't add anyone in the portal that's meaningful, and they lost four starters, three of whom were drafted, including first-rounder Francis Mauinoa. So they're going to have four new starters, one of them Samson Okunlola, who played quite a bit, but Samson's moving from guard to tackle. The only returning starter, Matthew McCoy, who's pretty good, he's moving from guard to tackle. They're starting a freshman at guard who really has only played tackle his entire life. It's going to be probably Jackson Cantwell over Ben Congdon, who's also a true freshman. On the other side at guard, they have a guy who's never started, who's very small, S.J. Alafatuli, but who's very athletic. And at center, they got a six-year guy who was supposed to start a couple of years ago, but wound up getting hurt for the season. And it's to be determined if he's going to be really good or not. That's Ryan Rodriguez. The caveat to all that, because in a normal world, you'd look at that on any team and say, yeah, that's a massive question mark. That area really might be very questionable and not do real well. But Alex Mirabal and Mario Cristobal, as you know, in Oregon, have this history of understanding and knowing and developing offensive linemen better than anybody. So the fact that they knew these guys were coming back, the fact that they didn't go in the portal because they could have said, oh, these guys aren't good enough, let's spend some money and get, you know, a really great offensive tackle, a really great offensive guard, and they did not do that, means to me that they're very comfortable with the offensive line. So who am I, or who are you, right, anybody listening, to say, oh, the offensive line's going to be terrible, or the offensive line won't be good, or the offensive line's a question mark, right? So I could see it going either way, where if it goes the wrong way, that would be sort of shocking, because that means Alex Mirabal and Mario Cristobal had a bad evaluation on their own offensive linemen that they recruited and developed. If that happens, we'll point the blame squarely at them. I have a hard time seeing that being the case right now as we sit here, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. Right.
Matt Shadell, our guest here, Kane Sport On 3 production. Really good stuff at Kane Sport. You can find all the good coverage over there. Our guest here for the number 7 team, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson, is the Miami Hurricanes. I look at the ACC and I have a lot of questions. Somehow, weirdly, they get to the national championship, but I think technically in tiebreakers they finished 5th, but represented the conference because you're not sending an 8-5, 8-4, whatever it was, Duke team to the playoffs. So we know that winning the ACC, they haven't done it since they joined the conference, and we know that's a huge thing. The next little hurdle to get through, they want to win the national championship, but winning the conference, who is the biggest threat to them in the ACC this year?
Well, that's another great question, because they don't play SMU, right? They don't play Louisville, the two teams that beat them last year that are probably considered the next best in the conference. They have a very favorable conference schedule, and two of the tougher teams they play in the ACC, if you want to call them tougher, I don't know, but Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh, they wouldn't probably scare anyone in the SEC, but in the ACC, they're probably top half for sure, but Miami has both those at home. So the only real game you'd say might be an uh-oh game is if Clemson, which has been on the downswing recently, as everyone knows, if they somehow resurrect themselves, and they have started going to the portal more now, finally, Dabo sort of figured out, hey, maybe I should be doing this a little more. If Clemson has a resurgent year, that game's on the road, and it might be tough. But that's really the only game I see in the schedule that's a real uh-oh in the ACC game. And the ACC, by the way, also has changed its format now after the disaster of last year, and they're no longer going to use some crazy complex system. It's basically going to be if you finish tied for first or second and the polls have this team higher, then that's the team that'll be in the AFC title game, which makes the most sense, right? Because last year we were using some crazy formula to try and figure out which of these five or six teams might play in the AFC title game. And the truth be told, which is crazy, but everyone I talk to that knows these things says if Duke had not won that AFC title game last year against Virginia, that Virginia would have been obviously in the BCS. They had to be, right? Because that's the rule. Because they were ranked high enough. Whereas Duke, by winning, was ranked so low that they were able to bring in a different BCS team. So if Virginia had been in as an ACC representative, the idea is that the committee would not have said, hey, we need a second ACC team, right? It just would have been Virginia. And then Notre Dame probably would have been in is what the feeling is among those I talked to in Miami. So if that had happened and Miami was left out of the playoffs because Virginia beat Duke in the ACC title game, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. Miami probably be ranked 15th or 20th. A lot of it is what have you done for me lately? Like we saw with FSU after their big one loss season, they were in the top 20 the following preseason and they lost almost every game they played, right? So a lot of it's the perception based on the previous season. Every year stands on its own. And Mario Cristobal will be the first to tell you he doesn't want to eat the rat poison, drink rat poison. Do you eat it or drink it? I don't even know. But whatever you're supposed to do with rat poison, he does not want to do that. And they're getting a lot of it right now.
I think it's easier to drink rat poison personally. That way nobody can suspect anything. You seem like you generally come off as a very nice, level-headed, reasonable human being, Matt. When we get some of the people on, you could have just answered my question and said, nobody. Miami is that much better than the rest of this conference because I think a lot of people outside of the bubble don't believe in really anybody in that conference except Miami in terms of like representing it, winning it, and getting to the playoffs.
Well, do you know how many years in a row Miami has lost a game they were favored in? I'll give you the answer. 23 years in a row. 23 years in a row they've been favored in a game that season and lost. Okay, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, I'm not one of these guys who I'm going to predict every year they're undefeated or with one loss just to make Miami fans happy. Like right. Fans know I'm not that guy. They complain I'm too pessimistic, but it would not shock me if they lose two games this year, right? Because on the road at Notre Dame is going to be tough. And then for them to break the 23-year tradition of losing a game they're favored in every year, that's to me, I'm a numbers guy. Like once they do it, then I'm a believer, right? It's always show me first. I'm not going to just sit here and say, oh yeah, this is the year, this is the year they go undefeated. This is the year they only lose one game and runs the title game again. So, I'm just one of those guys where I got to see it first.
It's funny that you bring that up because that kind of leads into my last question this is a unique one for me as an Oregon alum talking to somebody about Miami. It's like talking about your ex-girlfriend. And I know the flaws, right? I know the strengths because we saw it up close and personal for a number of years. There was never really a question about Mario in big games. He'd find a way to get the team ready and you'd pull off an upset or you'd knock off a top-ranked team and it always felt great. But his last year in Oregon, I will never forget, they go on the road to Ohio State and they beat C.J. Stroud and the Buckeyes with Anthony Brown at quarterback, and 2 weeks later they went on the road to Stanford and they lost to a 3-9 team that was just one of the worst that I've ever seen. And it was such a head-scratching moment of like, how do you go from that to that? And I don't want to take anything away from SMU and Louisville, to your point, because they were good teams last year, but Miami was a significant favorite in those games. It didn't matter in the end, they make it all the way to the national title. But is that a thing that bugs Miami fan of like, how do you keep losing a game seemingly every year to an inferior opponent and just not taking care of business? Because to your point, when you look at the schedule, there's not a lot of teams on there. Maybe Notre Dame would be the only one that's favored against Miami. Like in every other game, I would imagine they're almost a double-digit favorite.
Yeah, they should be. So Miami fans are very passionate. They are really into the team, and they get really mad when the team loses. Even if it's to Notre Dame, they're going to be really, really mad, and they'll blame everybody and fire the coaches, after one game. That's just how we are down here, which is good and bad, right? But fans certainly have not forgotten Georgia Tech, right? They have not forgotten some of these other games where it seemed like the offense was reined in too much and they let games stay close and they wound up either losing or in a close battle at the end, which Mario needs to somehow figure out how to erase that. I don't think you can do that until you win a national title, honestly, which could happen this year. And you mentioned, the Oregon comparison with offensive line this year to the Oregon offensive line of several years ago. There was a year at Oregon, if I'm not mistaken, right, where they lost every single offensive lineman from that, what was it, the Rose Bowl title team or the whatever it was, champion team. And And the next year, the offensive line was still really good, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes, correct.
You know, it was like COVID-shortened year, but the offensive line was still not giving up sacks, and the run game was just as good. So, you know, so that, again, that's an analogy you can draw or a parallel you can draw to this year's Miami offensive line. And the truth is, if Miami's offensive line is good, and if Miami's defensive ends are good, which they could be, you know, they might be susceptible to the run. We have to find out. That's going to be a major question mark area on defense. But if both those two things come through, then this could be that year that they go 11-1 or 12-0 and make another run to the title game. That, those are the two key areas to me that really need to pan out.
Matt, we'll get you out of here with this one. Number seven, according to my co-host, fair, foul, or just about right?
Well, because of the schedule, because they out-talent everyone by so much on the schedule other than Notre Dame, I think it's fair. If you look at the top 12 teams is all that matters, right? And I did this maybe a month ago, so forgive me if I'm wrong, but I looked at the top 12 preseason teams from last season, and I want to say it was four or five of them didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So you got like a 60% chance if you're in the top 12 in the preseason poll to make the playoffs, right? If there's an injury to quarterback for Miami, they won't be in the final 12, you know, if it's early enough in the season. If there's another couple of key injuries at spots where they're very thin, maybe offensive line, defensive line, or linebacker, there's going to be some issues. And so it's easy to sit here and say, if everyone stays healthy on paper, they're a national title caliber team. They certainly are. But as you look at these polls and the odds, you see Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Indiana ahead of them, right? And Miami is in the ACC, right? They're not battling with other teams in the same conference to try and get to the playoffs where they might lose, you know, God forbid you lose two games in the regular season and losing your title game, you are going to be on the bubble and very well may not get in the playoffs, right? And if Miami was in the SEC, perhaps, there would be questions like, can they lose just one game in the conference and win the SEC title, right? It's a different level to me. I know ACC fans hate to hear it, but to me it just is. And I know there's a bias favoring the SEC and some of these other conferences over the ACC. But again, the road is so much easier in my mind for Miami to get to the playoffs. Then the question becomes, have they been prepared by their ACC schedule to beat Oregon, to beat Ohio State, to beat Texas, Georgia, or Indiana, or whoever? So that's going to be the major question, right? Have they been prepared against enough top competition during a pretty easy schedule that only really has Notre Dame on it to be ready to face these guys in the postseason? Because they have to be. That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, good stuff. Matt Shadell, canesport.com, On3 production, with the preview of number 17, Miami, according to one Andy Johnson. Look forward to seeing what Mario has cooked up a year after getting the national championship. Matt, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. And let's catch up with you soon.
Anytime.
All right, there we go. Matt Shadell, canesport.com. On the Miami Hurricanes, who you have at number seven. We went a little long with him. I want to carry it over with asking this question going into the break. Should you feel this way about Mario Cristobal? We'll get to that coming up next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We got a loaded cafe today, man. There's going to be no farting around. What are you making that face for?
No funny business over there.
So we may have to extend the cafe.
A cafe. Double cafe?
We'll
we
see.
Might linger.
Order another round.
Extra cup of coffee. I need an extra cup of coffee.
Swag you was do. Out at the ballpark late, and I think he saw Azeem and went, holy crap, Sprague's asking me to find four clips and sent me 10.
Yeah, I woke up to text that we're, it's the 11th inning, it's the 12th inning. I'm like,
it
oh
was
my God.
1-0. At the end of the seventh inning, the Hops won 11-8 in 12.
There you go. That's baseball fun. For you, man.
Fireworks.
I'm going to ask you something I've been thinking about, and then I wanted to wait till we got to Miami. Good stuff from Matt Shadell.
Yeah, very honest assessment. I like that.
What, in your best guess, is Oregon's program if Mario Cristobal never got the job?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one because Willie Taggart was the first to kind of do the recruiting at the high level thing, but it was such a short amount of time, and the way his coaching career went, it's hard to see that ending well.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly established an expectation at the line of scrimmage that has put Oregon on a different trajectory. So are they where they're at now? It's a hard thing to answer because for all the strengths that Mario had, he also, I thought, had a lot of weaknesses that he's learned from as time has gone on. Now, his biggest bugaboo continues to be losing games you shouldn't lose, and it happens every year at Miami, and it's probably going to happen again this year. Now, last year, it didn't matter. They still found a way to the national title game, but I did love our guest bringing up the point. If Virginia wins the ACC title, they're not in the playoff. Virginia's going to the college football playoff. Miami's not in, and everybody is screaming about how Mario Cristobal missed the college football playoff again, because remember the year before they lost to Syracuse, and I can't remember who else knocked them off, and they lost a chance to go to the playoff because they were 10-2. So the line of scrimmage play was obviously a strength. I thought he struggled at times modernizing his offense around a quarterback that was a thoroughbred that could have done more at the college level. But I think he's learned and he's grown from that. So there will always be a respect for what he did and what he accomplished and an understanding of what he did. But I'm also not going to sit here and pretend like the only reason Oregon's at where they're at as a national profile program is because of what Mario Cristobal did.
Well, so that's where we might go our separate ways at the fork. It's not to say Oregon was already well represented and known about in college football.
They played for two national championships before him. Haven't played any since.
Exactly. That being said, it is a slippery slope for 99% of college programs. When you make a bad hire, you make another bad hire, oh my God, we're not in the mix. I don't know what Oregon is. I'm like you. I don't know if I can answer that fully. But if Willie Taggart doesn't leave, I tend to believe that's going to eventually hit the side of the mountain because guys like Mario would have eventually left, and the recruiting probably would have dipped. So I have no evidence he was good. You know, if you hire a PJ Fleck down the road, like, I don't look at the landscape and think everything that Oregon is today, and Lanning has certainly elevated it to his credit. He hasn't won the title, but he's elevated it. It's an interesting butterfly effect game to play of, I think Oregon's good, but do they become the kind of the 8-9 win program that, man, we can expect more, we should expect more versus what they have morphed into, where Mario was winning 10 games or winning a conference or Rose Bowl. And yeah, he let you down in moments, but eventually, like, he leaves and Lanning comes in because the program's in such a good spot and he elevates it to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I just think there's an element of, like, understanding frustration of a guy and what his weaknesses are and were, and recognizing that maybe without him, Oregon is not irrelevant, but they're a program that is not sitting in the position they're in today.
Yeah, I think in a different era, you could probably make that argument. I disagree in the modern era. Like, this format and system we have right now, how many programs are in a position to benefit from it more than Oregon?
Well, but
like, that's
Is Oregon any different? Let me ask you this. Is Oregon any different? I'm not talking about from a win-loss perspective, because I think I don't remember what their record was last year. Is Oregon any different than current Tennessee? And I'm not saying you know the answer to that. You may not agree with that. It's just an interesting thing to think about, like, what the impact was here, even if it let you down in spots, and then how that leads to Dan Lanning.
Sure.
Versus you don't hire him, you keep Willie T because he doesn't go to Florida State.
Yeah.
He fizzles. I think we all would agree he fizzles out. And then if you fizzle out, what's your build-up point from that, right?
And like, this would be my point. And I see the Tennessee point is valid. I also, Tennessee's a tough comp right now because they made the playoff, then their quarterback left in the offseason. And if Nico had stuck around, are they a playoff team again the last year?
Certainly.
And then you maybe feel differently about it. The only, like, I see the point, and I think there is a balance of letting bygones be bygones and appreciating what Mario accomplished here. I also, like, Oregon has money to spend. And in the modern era of the sport, I don't care what you were. We just had Indiana win a national championship. Mm-hmm. So what you were the 2-3 years before that doesn't necessarily preclude you from becoming something that you haven't been. So in a different era, like, this happened 10 years ago, I think the argument would have been much stronger of, like, damn, thank God that guy established recruiting. Mm-hmm. But had the thing cratered for a little bit and then NIL came around, like, Oregon's still going to be a player for the best players in the sport. So there's a balance there.
I think we're both kind of right, because I agree with your NIL and money.
Well,
point,
and then the other thing,
but,
like,
the right coach has to be the paycheck.
I think the Mario thing that I will always appreciate is Oregon was always a very sexy, flashy team, and they couldn't hang at the line of scrimmage. And that changed when Mario took offensive line serious, the defensive line maybe not quite as much, but offensive line in particular. Mm-hmm. They became one of the best units in the country seemingly every year, and they got guys like Penei Sewell and Jackson Powers Johnson to start it, and then Lanning took over. The only other thing that I would say to disagree just slightly with you is how much roster turnover there was from Cristobal to Lanning. Now, again, to be fair, it was coming out of the COVID bubble, and it was just kind of a weird time and extra years of eligibility and all that. But I think I remember in year two for Lanning, it was like an 85% new roster. And this is one of the arguments I made at the time about him versus Kalen DeBoer, because DeBoer had basically all of Chris Peterson's guys, and Lanning had kind of flipped his roster and like, this is his team. That's not really Kalen DeBoer's team. We'll see how that plays out. And then DeBoer ended up bolting for Alabama. A definite appreciation for what he's done. If Miami's going to be in the college football playoff this year, with their schedule, they might blow a game that they shouldn't. If they beat Notre Dame, they're a lock and automatically in. I have a really hard time seeing anybody else win the ACC this year.
Good stuff from Matt Shadell. If you missed that, you can check it out. 105.1 The Fan. Loaded second hour. Let's get into the Cafe. Day Dirt and Sprague, hour two on 105.1.